the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Al Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get it going. Happy Wednesday. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Steinberg along with you. It is Wednesday, October 2nd. Got a lot to get to. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Vix. How we doing?
We're doing pretty good, won't lie.
I like that hockey Hungary hoodie. A lot of H's. I like that. I
haven't seen you wear yours.
I wore it about a week ago. The red shirt you brought back. I was very, very...
Did you know I went to Europe this summer for the World Championship?
Yeah, I'm happy you did. Got me a great shirt in return. We're underway. We got lots to get to. Wherever you get your podcast, go get us on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever. Into the final two games of the preseason. And boy, are there some players under pressure now. Starts with, at least if you ask me, Vix, when it comes to players under pressure going into Calgary's second last penultimate.
Thank you.
Preseason game. Starts with Jacob Pelche. Because we don't know who will be playing with Wednesday night in Winnipeg, but we do know he will be playing. We also know it has been, I think, fair to say, an underwhelming camp for him. I don't think that's unfair to say that this has been a pretty underwhelming camp from Pelche. And I also think it's safe to say that these final two games are going to be absolutely massive for him, as I would guess he gets into both this game and Friday's game against the Winnipeg Jets. And the thing that hangs over everything now is the fact that Pelche, for the first time in his career, is waiver eligible. So the Flames now have a 2019 first round pick who has been quite highly thought of, not just in this city, but you know, there's a time where he was very highly thought of around the league. He was a giant hot button topic a couple of seasons ago with the Daryl Sutter, what number is he, in his first NHL game, and that, you know, he jumped in, had himself a really nice run, and there was a lot of excitement surrounding Jacob Pelche leading into last season. And since September, and since the shoulder injury of last year that knocked out half of his season, it has been a giant uphill climb for the 2019 first round pick. And now Pelche is in a situation where I think he absolutely is fighting for his life for an NHL spot at a camp, especially knowing some of the other players who have jumped up and jumped ahead of and really jumped off the page so far in this Flames camp. I am fascinated to see what Jacob Pelche is able to do in his final preseason, either final one or two preseason games here.
Yeah, for me, he's one of those players that, whether he is or not, from the outside looking in, it feels like he is on the bubble. And you mentioned Hanzik taking a step. Coronado's looked good in his second NHL camp. Brustevich has looked good. Like, not the same position, obviously, but you've seen so many young kids come in and make their mark over the course of the last couple of weeks. And Jacob Pelche being sort of the oldest of that group, he just hasn't taken that step. And it's not that he hasn't taken a step. It's that he doesn't look as good as he did last year in camp before he got injured. And he doesn't look as good as he did a couple seasons ago when he got a 20-ish game audition in the NHL, which not necessarily sparked the what number is he, but that was the beginning of that stretch, is what number was he from Daryl Sutter. It's just, there's been, I don't even think the expectation has been too high on Jacob Pelche, because it's not like we're expecting him to come in and challenge for a top six role, but it's the fact that it's just been such a lackluster display, if I can use that adjective, in terms of even where he was 2 years ago to where he is now in terms of his ability to make an impact in an NHL regular season game versus an NHL preseason game here now. You're absolutely right in your estimate or your declaration that if you had to pick a guy that's on the hot seat the most right now heading into the second last game of the exhibition series, for me it's Pelche as well.
And if you take a look at who the Flames have sent to Winnipeg for this game on Wednesday night, there are plenty of names that are also on the bubble, but of them, I don't know if there is one that is most under pressure compared to Pelche. I think part of that is because we are talking about a guy who has been so highly thought of in this organization, and a guy that we've talked about for so long since he was drafted in 2019, and a guy that, again, did provide a good deal of excitement. I mean, that last year under Daryl Sutter was a pretty miserable year, all things considered, with the way Huberdeau's first season went and, you know, some of the rumors of infighting and butting heads with Huberdeau, Kadri, and some other veterans and Daryl, and they just could never get themselves really out of the starting blocks, and they end up missing the playoffs. Jacob Pelche was one of the very few bright spots that year and was something that brought Flames fans a lot of excitement that year. And so to see how last season went, in a lot of ways, by no fault of Pelche,
out of his control for the most part.
I mean, you can't help that your shoulder gets separated on a, you know, kind of a borderline hit in the preseason.
Yeah.
Guy doesn't even play in North America anymore, the guy who hit him in Stidnich, and then gets hurt again in his return. Like, a lot of what happened wasn't in his control, and yet it still was a frustrating year. And now you come into this year and you're hoping for a really big camp from Pelche, and it's been just, it's kind of fallen a little flat. I will say, though, from an attitude standpoint or from an outlook standpoint, Pelche is doing his best to stay positive and keep that smile on his face. There's just a little bit from his conversation with the media on Wednesday morning at the Scotiabank Saddledome. And Megan Mickelson and I asked him a couple questions about that. And then the last question that Mick asks, some really, really interesting stuff from Jacob Pelche. Some really good self-awareness here from Pelche.
You know, I'm just keeping it a game by game, to be honest. You know, I'm just trying to do the best each game. And, you know, for me, it's, of course, again, you know, you want to score goals, you want to produce offensively, but I think it's to be good in these zone, you know, to be a two-way player, and yeah.
I know one of the things you talked about when you signed, you talked about, you know, coming with that smile, and have you felt like that's been there throughout camp?
Yeah. No, of course. You know, I think compared to last year, you know, at the end of the year or in the middle of the season, I think I'm more me, you know what I mean? And even on the ice, I feel more, you know, like I play my style of game. And I think it comes with me being myself off the ice as well.
Do you feel like you play your best hockey when you're, like, being, like you said, yourself, having fun, smiling, versus thinking of, like, the pressure and the evaluation and all that?
Yeah, of course. I think, you know, like, when it's camp, though, it's always, like, more stressful because, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to, for me, I don't want to go on waivers, you know, I want to stay here, I want to be with the Flames. So, you know, it's a little bit more stressful, but at the end of the day, you know, you're playing hockey for a job. So, I mean, it's kind of big, you know what I mean? Like, it's fun. And I think that's what it should be about, you know, to have fun, to work hard, but to have fun at the same time. And it's kind of the mindset I have since I'm young. So
there's some really good self-awareness from Jacob Pelche. He's eyes wide open in what this situation is. He knows that he's waiver eligible.
Not oblivious
for
at all.
The first time. And that's why he's so easy to root for. That's why he's such a, you know, whether it be the shots we get of him on the bench and pumping up his teammates, or how excited he is when the team scores and he's on the ice, or whatever it may be. Then you hear stuff like that where he's just being honest and really aware. And it just, he's an easy guy to root for. You want this to work out so much for him. And yet here we are into training camp and it hasn't. We've got a couple of things, or I've got a couple of things rather, that are kicking around in my mind. Even a couple of things that I've read on the text line over the last number of weeks that I wanted to bounce off you. But, you know, I'm just curious as to your reaction as to what you heard there from Jacob.
Very self-aware, very understanding of the situation that he's in. But to me, he doesn't sound panicked, which is a very good thing from his perspective and his sort of approach to how he's going to play, if it's one or if it's two more of these remaining preseason games. And the fact of the matter remains, through four games, he's one of the rare players that's played that many. No points, minus three, two shots. Like, he's had a hard time making an impact. But on the flip side, you hear him talk there, or you see him in the premiere episode of The Chase in the car ride with Matt Coronato on the way to the airport. And it's just, you get a glimpse of his personality, you get a glimpse of his demeanor, and it's impossible not to root for him, to cheer for him, whether he's a first-round pick, a fourth-round pick, or a seventh-round pick. Like, just his general attitude makes you want to see him succeed. But the fact of the matter remains is if you're looking at the chase, if you will, if you want to actually just steal the title of the new Calgary Flames series, Flames TV series, looking at a bunch of the different young players trying to push for roster spots, he's in thick competition, and I don't know where he sits in terms of what tier he's in that competition, because it just hasn't worked for him. But he knows and he understands what is being asked of him and what he needs to do, and he's bringing that attitude, which I think helps the situation for him.
What about, there's been some sentiment on the text line that before, and I don't know if it was on a Flames Talk post game or if it was on one of our afternoon shows, all the texts kind of blend together. But somebody suggested that don't let this be Matthew Phillips. Don't lose a guy until you know exactly what he is. Now, turns out so far that Matthew Phillips has just kind of been that tweener, right? Like, has not shown that he is a bona fide full-time NHLer. Fair enough. But I think what frustrated a lot of Flames fans is that here's a guy that they didn't find out in a Flames uniform exactly what they had, because maybe didn't get the opportunities that a lot of people were thinking he should. What about the whole idea of, hey, give him some real time here in the regular season and see if he can maybe perform better than what we've seen so far in training camp? Is that something that you subscribe to? Because I do think there's some wisdom in that, knowing how much has already been invested in this player. I don't think it's completely offside to suggest that you still want to make sure you know exactly what you've got with him before you make a drastic decision that could potentially see him gone for nothing.
Get ready for the ultimate hedge of yes and no. I don't get the comparison to Matty Phillips, other than the fact that one was 5'6" and the other one's probably 5'10". One was a sixth rounder, one was a first rounder. Now, I do subscribe to the theory of keep him around and see if you can rebuild his game a little bit to the point of where it was a couple seasons ago when he looked like a blossoming 21-year-old that had middle six upside. But I just look over the roster right now and I go, okay, well, who's he going to have to beat out to stay on the roster? That's one discussion. And I can see an argument for it. I really can. But then there's the other one of, okay, who's he going to beat out of a spot in the lineup for any sort of consistent amount of time to get that view? And as bad as last season was for Jacob Pelletier, he still played 30-plus games between the NHL and the AHL, and you have another 4 years of a body of work in examining his progression, when it was made, the lack of progression when it was made. But if I'm sitting in that chair and it's my call, to me, I do believe making him the 13th or 14th forward and trying to rebuild his game through NHL practices, that's something I would be in favor of trying.
I think I would be too. And we'll read some texts here in a little bit, because some great texts have come in on this. As much as I understand the sentiment of, geez, you put a lot of time in, you got to do what's best for the roster right now. If that means putting them on waivers, put them on waivers and see where the chips may fall. I do get that. Like, I don't agree with it, but I understand where it's coming from. For me, I'm on the maybe don't be so hasty in that regard. And you know what? If in November it becomes clear that, yeah, it's just not really, it's not happening, even though we've given him some regular season games, lots of practice, it's still not happening. Well, then I think I'd be a little bit more okay with them going down the waiver route. And so your idea of building him back in practices and cycling him in so, like, I don't think it is the worst thing in the world if there are some different permutations you see on that fourth line. Maybe it's Hanzek and he's in, and sometimes Klapka's in, and sometimes Pelche's in. Like, if they were to go one night Pelche with Rooney and Hanzek as a fourth line, no problem with that. And that means, and I'm not trying to sit Ryan Lomberg, I'm just saying that like there are some different permutations you can work with here that serve you right now and also serve the future, which I still think the Flames need to be thinking about when they're making lineup decisions.
And it's a lot easier to take this approach with Jacob Pelletier, the person, than if he was arrogant, if he was cocky, if
right.
he was, because he has the perfect temperament to be that 13th or 14th guy just because of how upbeat he is. And inside it might frustrate him a little bit, but he's never going to let that show in the room, and he's going to always be a guy that tries to pick his teammates up. So I understand it from that way. But then to just counter my own argument, there's only 10 games in October. How many, like, what's the over under on how many games Jacob Pelletier would potentially play? If it's Sam Hanzik that's on the roster, if it's Adam Klapka that's on the roster, and is that sample size, even if you divide it by those three players, you're looking at 3 1/3. Is 3 games in October enough to evaluate further once you get beyond the exhibition series? Like, is this going to be a November, December, January thing where he's only played 15 or 20% of the games? There's a little bit of sunk cost fallacy to examine in this too, in that, well, he's a former first-round pick. You got to kind of give him a little bit more runway. But at the same time, he's not worth a first-round pick on the trade market. And that's why you're looking at potentially the exposing him to waivers route, because the value might not necessarily be there. And so now you're going to give him time at the expense of your 2023 first-round pick who's come out. I'm just using this as an example. We don't know how the lines are actually going to shake up. But it's easiest to compare those three young guys, whether it's Klapka, yeah. Hanzik, Pelletier, and even if you want to mix in Matt Coronato in there, but that's a tough, tall task to find 4 roster spots for those players, and just given the way the Flames are made up. It just, at what point does the we gave him enough time become enough? I'm only saying that to counter my own point, because I do believe putting him on the roster as the 13th or 14th forward and giving him more time is the route that I would personally
take. I believe that here we are, October 2nd. I believe that Pelletier should be on the opening night roster. And I know there's like, what about Merritt? Well, what about, I believe he should be on the opening night roster. Opening night lineup, different thing, but roster, yes, because I don't believe now is the time to put him on waivers and potentially lose him for nothing. And I know that lots of other teams understand he's struggling too, but you know, I don't see this all that differently than Valimaki, and I'm not suggesting that losing Yusso was this franchise-changing mistake, but it's still, that's a former first-round pick, a few years removed from being selected, with some injury issues that hampered him, and you ended up losing him for nothing. And I guess I would just rather see the Flames make the final determination on a first-round pick as to what he is, as opposed to that determination being made otherwise, whether it's positive or negative, if that makes a lick of sense.
Well, at the same time, too, it'd be one thing if keeping Pelletier kept Hanzik out of the lineup or kept Coronato out of the lineup. But if you're exposing Pelletier to waivers for the opportunity to have a 27 or a 28-year-old guy that's been in your organization for 1 or 2 seasons, if that's what we're balancing here, if it's going to be not Jacob Pelletier occupying one of those sort of spot starts role versus a guy that's already fully developed at age 28, that's just a good journeyman guy, that's probably a quad A player, that's probably a little bit too good for the AHL, but hasn't proved to be an everyday NHLer, even though that 28-year-old-ish guy might have outplayed Pelletier in camp, I do see the merit of keeping the younger player who might have a little bit more runway, who you do have a little bit more invested in organizationally. I just hope that this doesn't become almost like a year-long thing where you're trying to figure out what Jacob Pelletier is.
Because well, I don't think it would be. Because, and I'm not suggesting you do this all year. I just think that as of right now, I think the risk is greater of him being claimed on waivers before the season, late in training camp, than it would be if he did it in early December. Because then, if you're doing that, it means that there's a little bit more body of work to suggest he
has. And better competition.
Yeah, and also more body of work to suggest that he remains, like he still hasn't popped, and he still hasn't proven it, all that type of stuff. And I think it's less likely that a team 2 months into a season with more of a body of work says, yeah, let's go claim that guy. Whereas right now, it feels like there'd be more potential of the sentiment of, hey, maybe we can rehab, maybe we can bring this guy back, maybe we can get him to where we think his potential actually is. So that's why I'm in favor of right now not putting him on waivers, waiting, if you have to, waiting until there's a little bit more of a testing ground that's been tried out.
Now, just to toss this out there for fun, are we biased because we like him so much? Or this is just the proper asset management from a former first-round pick who's got 4-ish years in the organization that you still think is something there? Because I just look at what he was a couple seasons ago in that short stint, and it really looked like there was a guy that was going to be, at worst, a fourth-line winger and the potential to play up higher in your lineup. And I just, that's what makes me the most hesitant. It's not what we've seen in the last 365 days. It's that small sample size in the NHL where he was first on the forecheck. He was banging. He was hugging
really
Jonathan Huberdeau.
Yeah.
Like that. You were off the top. You said it. It was one of the lone bright spots in that stretch for the Calgary Flames. And I think I'm more willing to, if he hadn't shown that, I'm not necessarily entertaining this conversation of making your 14. Cause you're not trying, cause I do believe you're trying to rebuild him to that. But if he hadn't had that, that just means you're trying to build him to something that he hasn't shown to be. And it's an awful small sample size to get attached to. But I just remember the energy that he injected into the organization as a whole during that stretch going, man, if he could even get back to that, he's my fourth line left winger all day.
Last one before we hit the text line. And we like, this isn't have to be, this is going to be a pretty simple answer for both of us. Do you think he gets claimed on waivers?
I do. There are too many teams out there that will have the space up front that go, I can fix him. Whether they can or not, it'll be remain to be seen. We've seen countless examples of a team thinking they can fix a player and it never works out. But what are they out? They're out a 20-game stretch. Mm-hmm. They haven't invested a whole lot of development time. And in the rare case, that player does pop or turn into something, turns into an NHL regular, boom. You're happy from that organizational perspective if you're the team that grabbed him. I absolutely think he would get picked.
I'm with you. I do too. I mean, there's been too much linking him with Montreal over the last number of years. And now Montreal's without Line A. I think that maybe other teams might pass, but I wonder about Montreal. I wonder about San Jose. I wonder about Anaheim, but I really wonder about Montreal. So I just, even if he gets past some of those teams.
Chicago.
Like I think there would be teams that would be interested. So I'm with you on that one. Okay, to the text line we go. 960. This reads, I think Pelche's lost his mojo. It's as simple as that. And somehow he has to find it to get into the NHL. I think that's there's absolutely something to that. This says, you can also add on to the end of that Phillips argument that he didn't get the opportunity because he wasn't good enough, and Daryl Sutter was 100% right about him. Let's give Sutter credit where credit is due, and I know a lot of people have a hard time doing that, but credit is due. Phillips was nothing. He's still nothing and will always be nothing, and kind of the same with Pelche. You know he had that stab at Sutter, my number, blah, blah, blah. Where is your number today? It hasn't shown up yet this preseason. The Sutter stuff aside, because I understand, like, yeah, I mean, in the end, Daryl's evaluation on Matthew Phillips did end up being correct. The only thing I would say to that is I still, especially even more so with a first round pick, I'd still rather the Flames find out themselves.
Right.
That to me is still important. Like, find it out on your own instead of losing him on waivers. And you know what? If you lose him on waivers and he goes elsewhere and it proves that he's not what you think he is, or he's not going to be a full-time NHLer, I still would rather that happen in the organization. So all of what I just read in that text doesn't change my opinion that I don't think they should put him on waivers, whether that texter is a big Daryl guy or not, Daryl person or not, or a big Pelche person or not.
The Calgary Flames found out that Matthew Phillips was not an NHLer when Matthew Phillips was a member of the Washington Capitals organization.
Yep.
And it would suck for the Calgary Flames to find out that Jacob Pelche is an NHLer when Pelche is in a different NHL city.
Yep. This is from our boy Dylan and Revy. I don't mind Pelche, and I'd like to see him succeed, but in the interest of always earned and never given mindset, the behind-the-scenes show stressed so much in Episode 1, maybe they do waive him. There are several D-men, a goalie, and a few forwards that have earned that healthy scratch cycled in paycheck more than Pelche. Sorry to be tough. That comes from Dylan in Revy.
Just to that point real quick, there might be young guys that are more worthy of a 13 or a 14 spot if you just look at the camp body of work and throw out the birth certificates. But from a development point of view standpoint, you don't want anybody necessarily 22 or under playing once every 2 weeks in the NHL versus playing 20 to 25 minutes a night in the AHL.
This reads, if the Flames see a name on the waiver wire Sunday that catches their eye, would that change their mind on putting Pelche possibly on the waiver list? Well, you're not going to get access to the final waiver day list until you've made your decision. So you don't get like the advanced look. Oh, this is what other team, let's pop them on. And Sunday is the last day for waivers before the rosters are due on Monday. This reads, it's very simple with Pelche. The injury set him back. He needs more time. You don't just give him to the Habs on waivers. I'm with you, Mick, on that one. It's kind of exactly where I am. Tom in Cedarbrae says, want to be careful to not have another Ferland or Sven Berchi. This reads, I need to see a lot more urgency and energy in his game. He's not making any impact anywhere on the ice. This says, you guys are hoping he's a fourth line winger. That's your answer. Let him go. And there you go. Just a few Pelche texts at 960-960. Because for me, he's the guy that is most under pressure going into Calgary's second last penultimate preseason game on Wednesday night.
I love that you say that word just for me. You make sure that we lock eyes.
Darn right I do.
When it happens. Can't disagree with you. I think he's feeling the heat right now.
We're underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and we are coming at you on this hour on Flames Talk from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Well, lots happening around the Pacific Division, and we have got lots to dive into as a result, including what's going to happen in Los Angeles now that Drew Doughty's on the shelf month to month. Welcome back. Flames Talk on a Wednesday continues. Time to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. We say hello to our Pacific Division insider from NHL Network. Jonathan Davis joins us right now. JD, appreciate the time, my friend, as the season is almost upon us. How we doing?
We're doing great. Yeah, days away. Nice early start on Friday with the Devils and Sabres. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. We got the European games to kick us off, and then North America kicks off next week in the National Hockey League. I guess let's start in your neck of the woods. JD always joins us from Southern California. And, you know, some significant news with both the SoCal teams. And let's start with the LA Kings. The last time we talked was Wednesday afternoon of last week, and then Wednesday night was when Drew Doughty hurt his ankle. And so the last week, the Kings have been without Drew Doughty, their star defenseman, and will remain without Drew month to month because of that ankle injury and ankle surgery. I guess just they've already lost other blue liners. They said goodbye to some blue liners in the off season. Just can you maybe put into perspective how large a loss this is for LA?
Well, it's huge. I mean, you've got a guy that plays, you know, almost half the game every night. You know, number one in ice time, plays the power play, kills penalties. You know, he is not the same guy offensively that he was. But man, he's still a really good defenseman, a guy that, you know, that I think, you know, if he's healthy, he'll play for Canada, I think, at the Four Nations. So I think that kind of tells you where he's at. You know, what we're talking, 16 years in the NHL, I think something. I think I'm about right on that.
Sounds about right to me.
You know, so it's a significant loss. And then, you know, when you hear Coach Jim Hiller discuss, you know, well, what are they going to do? Who's going to play with Mikey Anderson on the top pair to fill in for Doughty while he's out? And, you know, I think a lot of the fans are clamoring for Brandt Clark, but that was shot down pretty quickly. I mean, they said Brandt Clark you know, the Kings' first round draft pick from a couple of years ago, and supposed to be the heir apparent to Doughty, that they want to ease him in. He'll play first unit power play, but they don't want to put him in a spot right now to replace Doughty with Mikey Anderson. So we're hearing the name Kyle Burrows. Well, you know, I mean, Kyle Burrows was, you know, look, played what, 70 plus games for San Jose. And, you know, ideally that's a guy that's going to be slotting in on your second or third pair. You know, more likely you'd want him on your third pair, but so that's where they're at right now. And they start out with seven games on the road. And yes, okay, this was the team that, you know, started out last year winning 11 straight on the road, but this is not last year's team. And, you know, you alluded to the fact right off the top that, you know, it's not just Doughty that they've lost Doughty to injury, but they lost Matt Roy, who was, you know, a key cog on their second pairing last year. He's now in Washington. So it is a big loss. And, oh, by the way, they start this road trip off in Buffalo, Pat, they have lost 8 of 10 and 17 of 20 at Buffalo.
So history's not on their side.
Well, it's, yeah. I mean, maybe you get Buffalo a little off kilter after, you know, starting the season in Europe, but this has definitely not been a city that has treated them very well, or a team that has been very gracious hosts, no matter who's been on that roster. I think maybe too many chicken wings for the Kings every time they go into Buffalo.
Yeah. What is there? And I asked Sarah Valli this on our show on Tuesday, and you know, his answer was pretty understandable because of the cap situation and because Doughty will be coming back at some point this season. There's really not a whole lot of recourse for LA in terms of going out externally and trying to replace him. Hey,
no, there's not. I mean, okay, so you go out and you sign a Justin Schultz or a Kevin Shattenkirk, but then what are you going to do, you know, when Drew comes back, you know, let's say late December, January? I mean, you're not going to keep that guy. I think that, you know, it's really just kind of managed from within. So I don't see them going out and finding, you know, and signing somebody. It doesn't make good sense right now.
How close to being not just a full-time NHLer, but a full-time impact maker, how close is Brandt Clark?
I don't know. I mean, it's a great question. You know, he feels, you know, you talk to him and there's an air of confidence, and not arrogance, but there's an air of confidence with him. Ultimately, you know, LA, what the Kings have focused on throughout training camp, and I talked about, I think, with you earlier on, was that they wanted Brandt Clark just to focus on the defensive part of his game. They know what he's got offensively. So we have to see, you know, where he's at defensively when he's playing NHL games and not, you know, not playing in a rookie tournament and not playing in preseason games. So, you know, the jury's still out there. You know, and I asked the Kings executive, you know, tell me why I'm wrong that Brandt Clark shouldn't play on the top pair with Mikey Anderson, just like how the Kings put Drew in there right off the hop. And the response I got was, well, at least to start the year on the road, you're going to have two undersized defensemen playing on your top pair, and there's some concerns there. Look, Brandt Clark's not Drew Doughty. And so they want to try to ease him in on that third pair with Joel Edmondson. And we'll see, you know, and with Edmondson, you just never know how many games he's going to play because can't stay healthy.
Okay, so that's the Los Angeles standpoint. Let's move to the other SoCal team. We're talking to Jonathan Davis. He is our NHL Network Pacific Division insider. Joins us Wednesdays here on Flames Talk. JD, where are the Ducks going in terms of their goaltending situation? We know John Gibson is on the shelf. We also know that John Gibson has kind of been shuffled down the depth chart a little bit, or maybe has lost his gig as the bona fide, no questions asked, number one over the last couple of years. A lot of talk that Anaheim might be scouring the waiver wire to try to pick somebody up to help augment things on the last line of defense and in net. What's your read on that situation and where things are with John Gibson banged up?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate with, you know, having the appendectomy surgery, that's going to take him out. I mean, look, Lucas Dostal, I think, you know, is the heir apparent to being the number one. But I think, you know, Pat Verbeek was not prepared prior to the injury to move Gibson, you know, unless someone was willing to take some salary. But I think what would help Dostal is not to have to throw him right into the fire and have him play, you know, 55 games, even if Gibson was healthy. I think you make a good point that I think they will be scouring the waiver wire, find themselves, you know, an NHL backup that can help support Dostal until Gibson comes back. Okay. and is ready, and then they can figure it out. But look, I'm a big Dostal fan. I'm very impressed watching him. He's, you know, look, a little undersized for a goalie, but, you know, positionally plays really well. I mean, look, in my limited, you know, goaltending expertise, I usually defer to people like Kevin Woodley on these areas. But, you know, he looks very comfortable out there. But, look, I still think back to, you know, what happened in Philly last year. And not that Anaheim's in a playoff position, but, you know, both Philly and even Detroit with Alex Lyon, you know, they overplayed these guys for a variety of different reasons. And there's no reason to do that to Dostal, especially on an Anaheim team that's, you know, they're not challenging for a wild card spot. So, you know, give this guy, you know, another year of experience, you know, get him into that 40 game, 45, whatever it is, and you know, just, you know, help him build that stamina.
We're chatting with Jonathan Davis. He is our Pacific Division insider, joins us every Wednesday from NHL Network here on Flames Talk on Sportsnet 960 The Fan as we take a look around the Pacific Division. That's the SoCal story. And we probably don't need to spend a ton of time on this in San Jose, but doesn't sound like overly major when it comes to Macklin Celebrini. Sustained a little bit of an injury, but nothing to worry about in terms of long term. Is that probably a fair way of phrasing it?
I think so. I mean, I watched the play last night. I mean, it sure seemed that if this was, you know, a regular season game that, you know, maybe he returns, you know, in that game, or, you know, he's back the next game. It did not look like anything that was too severe. I mean, I don't get the sense that, you know, that we're concerned that Macklin Celebrini's not going to be playing opening night.
Are you, what's your excitement level when it comes to Celebrini and what he might be able to accomplish as a rookie this year?
Well, I think the Sharks are must-watch TV, you know, for good reasons this year. I mean, last year, you know, if you like train wrecks, that was the reason why you would tune into the Sharks, because it was just an absolute, you know, dumpster fire, especially if you were a guy that liked to wager on the over. I mean, that was great, you know, that was the reason you would tune into a Sharks game. Or to bet the Sharks, you know, team total to go under. I mean, because they just couldn't score. But look, with Celebrini and Will Smith and William Eklund and Zetterlund, and, you know, and then they bring in, you know, NHL players. And then we, you know, and we'll see what, you know, Askarov when he is healthy. But you've got now Tyler Toffoli, and you've got Jake Walman on the blue line, and Cody Ceci, and you've got Alex Lenberg. And so, you know, this should be a better team than it was a year ago. And they've got guys that will help support, you know, the kids. I'm definitely, you know, the Sharks games will definitely be must watch. I mean, similar to, you know, you want to watch Connor Bedard last year. There's no question.
Yeah. Yep.
I'll be tuning into Sharks games.
And let's wrap it up with Vegas and the Golden Knights. And some definite uncertainty when it comes to the injury status of Wild Bill William Karlsson. What do we know there with one of the most important players, one of the few remaining misfits?
I mean, he's been out, hasn't played for quite some time, hasn't practiced. And, you know, we're 1 week from opening night. So, you know, today at practice, they had Nick Waugh centering the second line with Mark Stone and Brett Howden. So, you know, we'll see where this pans out. But it sure seems that him being there for opening night is in jeopardy. But hey, look, I mean, Vegas still, you know, down the middle is pretty deep. You know, you know with Eichel, Waugh, who I think, you know, is definitely going to play in any team's top nine, and then obviously you've got Thomas Hertl. So, They're still in a good spot, but, you know, it would be nice. You know, they'd be in a better spot, obviously, if they had William Karlsson. And then it gives them some flexibility on how they'd even want to play Nick Waugh. You could even play him on the wing. But yeah. So they're in a good spot. They've got the depth there to cover it. And, you know, and look, the Karlsson injury, one man's injury is another player's opportunity. So, you know, Tanner Pearson's in there and on a PTO. He's looked good. There's Tanner Lisinski, a 27-year-old who they signed to a two-year free agent deal in the summer. He's been, I think he's their leading scorer in preseason, scored another goal last night. And then another guy who's getting an extended look, and I thought played an outstanding game last night, was Brendan Brisson. You know, their first round draft pick from what, I think 2019. Yeah. And if the name sounds familiar to some, his dad is Pat Brisson, the agent who represents some guy named Crosby and Kane and, you know, Kopitar. There's definitely some lineage, but so, you know, there's opportunities that are presenting, you know, that are now, you know, another opportunity being given to some other players that, you know, with the Karlsson injury. So it's one to monitor, but I think they've got enough depth. I mean, the bigger issue in Vegas is really at the end of the day, how is Victor Olofsson, can he and Jack Eichel, you know, regain that flair that they had in Buffalo? And can Alexander Holtz be, well, you know, a guy that scores 25 to, you know, let's say 25 goals, even if he gets 25, that should be good enough.
Yeah.
Who they got from Jersey. I thought Holtz was really good in New Jersey. Just, you know, couldn't find a way to crack the lineup with Lindy Ruff.
Great stuff as always, JD. Appreciate the time, my friend. We'll do it again next Wednesday, and the regular season will be underway. We'll be getting ready for the Flames and their regular season opener. We'll chat again next week. Thank you, pal.
Thank you. Have a good one, Pat.
You too, man. Jonathan Davis is our Pacific Division insider, spins us around the league every Wednesday here on Flames Talk as we start to wrap things up this hour. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Cam and Shan have been our producers this hour. And Jonathan Davis joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.